Recording in progress.
Good morning, everyone. We'll start the Health Committee meeting with the Board of Supervisors for July 28th. The clerk, take the roll.
Supervisor Tam excused. Supervisor Miley?
Present. And we expect Supervisor Tam to be with us at any moment. You need to say anything about how people can participate? Remotely or in person? No? Okay. All right. Okay, so we have one item today. And as I said, Supervisor Tam should be with us at any time now. It's a Measure C Children's Health and Child Care Initiative update, the pediatric portion. And we have the folks from Alameda County Health here to take us through this. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Supervisor Miley. All right. Good morning, everyone. Today I'm going to be presenting on the Children's Health and Child Care Initiative, but the Pediatric Healthcare Account Safety Net Fund recommendation, so that portion of that fund. And this is what I'm going to be covering, a bit about the Measure C background around the Pediatric Healthcare Account specifically, and then recommendations for implementation of the Measure C Safety Net Fund, and then also a plan for the Measure C Citizen Oversight Committee. And then lastly, requested action for the board. So a bit on the background, I think most of you in the room probably know this, but just for those that are listening in, it's a 20-year half-cent sales tax that was passed by 65% of the voters in March of 2020. And it was held up in litigation, but ultimately we were successful in having those funds available in 2025. And it's estimated approximately $150 million in annual revenues. And those funds are to be allocated 80% to the child care and preschool early education account, and then 20% to the pediatric healthcare account managed by Alameda County. And the measure requires a citizen oversight committee, which we'll be talking about at the end of the presentation. And this is a bit of the overview around the 20% that I just mentioned. In November of 2024, there was a board letter from Supervisor Carson recommending an expenditure policy that that 80% would go to Benioff Children's Hospital Oakland and 20% would go to Alameda County Health. And then in April 1st, 2025, there was a board letter from Supervisor Miley that further specified that 20% allocation, or sorry, the 80% allocation, and that's what you see here below. So 75% will go to UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital to keep open and maintain and upgrade and expand and fully staff its Level 1 Pediatric Trauma Center and emergency department in Alameda County, and also to improve the availability, accessibility, and effectiveness of pediatric healthcare services. And then 5% is to be spent on critical staffing shortages, especially for specialty and subspecialty care, enhanced training programs, and also acquire that essential diagnostic equipment. And lastly, the safety net fund, and this is what I'm going to be talking about today, is the 20% that is to be allocated to Alameda County Health. And the focus of that 20% safety net fund is to maintain and protect the availability and accessibility of our local healthcare resources, specifically to the unique needs of pediatric patients in Alameda County. And then this is just the language from the ordinance that I won't read, but just everything I just went over reflects this ordinance, which is, again, that Level 1 Pediatric Trauma Center, focusing on the local children's healthcare safety net, and also exploring innovative programs for young adult patients and their families so they can better access pediatric healthcare services and make sure that those services are effective. And again, so this is the estimate of the revenue. So the estimates are that, and this is as of June 30th. So for the current pediatric healthcare account overall estimate is $30 million annual. So that's the base allocation overall. And the allocation for the 80% would be $24 million annually, and that's for UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital. And then for the 20%, which I'm going to be talking about today, that would be a $6 million annual base allocation. And then we have about $31 million that's been accumulated since the tax began since they began to collect the tax in 2020. Good morning, Supervisor Tam.
Good morning. So, Supervisor, Lena Tam would be joining us shortly, and voila, she's here. Good morning, Supervisor. Continue.
Good morning.
We just started about 5 minutes ago.
We just started. We just covered some background. And now I'm actually going to get into the recommendations. And this is just a bit of context before we get into the specifics. Our focus is to allocate the accrued and the annual revenue, so to focus on that $6 million base, as well as the $31 million that's been accrued. We also want to establish a prudent reserve, which is at least 10% recommended, but we have a bit more that I'll talk about in a bit. And we decided on a 3-year funding cycle. We want it to be a bit shorter so that we can review the strategies to make sure that, you know, things are going well and they're still relevant. And then we also want it to align with our Measure A cycle. And all of the strategies leverage existing infrastructure and build on existing assessments and plans, which I'll talk a bit more about. And it's a mix of county programs and staffing, as well as CBO contracted programs. And lastly, we're prioritizing strategies that support cross-sectional and holistic support for our priority populations. So on this slide, this just focuses a bit on some of the input that we use, some of the needs assessments, plans, data that we looked at in order to come up with these strategies. Some of it was mandates, like the strategy for the health services at the Juvenile Justice Center. We also have several needs assessments and planning processes that the Public Health Department does on a regular basis. One of those is the Maternal Child and Adolescent Health Title V Needs Assessment. That particular needs assessment highlighted the need for more adolescent services. There's also the Community Health Improvement Plan. And the Community Health Improvement Plan highlighted just a couple of priorities. One was access to care, and another one was promoting peaceful families and communities. And those priorities led to more programming in immunization and violence prevention. So that plan really helped us also continue to focus on that programming. We also do a lot of federally qualified health center engagement. We have our community provider advisory group that meets regularly. And Healthy Schools and Communities also meets with our school health center operators on a regular basis, some of which are FQHCs. And then we've been tracking all the priorities, gaps, and everything that's been coming up and highlighted at the Board of Supervisors meetings, as well as our children and youth data. So we've presented, I don't know if y'all remember, I think it was at the Health Committee, a children and youth data presentation, and we really looked at that data to help identify our priority populations that we want to focus on with these strategies. A few more considerations that we looked at. We wanted to make sure that these strategies were really, concentrated on equity and community need, that they're addressing the needs of historically underserved communities and priority populations, and focusing on existing gaps in our service system, and that they have an impact and they're effective, so they have proven track records and they align with our agency goals. And that we have feasibility and readiness. So we have the infrastructure in place, the staffing that's ready to implement these strategies. And if we need partners, it wouldn't be too difficult to kind of find the partners that we need to implement what we're recommending. And also that it meets Measure C criteria. And then these are our priority populations. Let's see here. So you'll see that... But before I get into the specifics of each priority population, I just want to make note of just kind of the focus on children and adolescent health in general. We know that health trajectories early in life set the stage for health throughout the life course. And we see persistent, concentrated inequities in mortality in young and middle age. And this is why it's important for us to invest in kids now. And with these new investments in child health, we can help address the inequities in mortality and other health outcomes at young ages that I mean, these inequities have been persistent for far too long. Also want to note that there's a lot of overlap in these priority populations. And we want to make our best effort to incorporate all of these priorities into all of the strategies that we're recommending. So we'll be putting these priority populations into our RFPs and making sure that we're, you know, in our learning communities and all of our spaces, that we're really emphasizing these priority populations and all the work that we do through this funding. Also, I want to mention that there's a particular focus on adolescent and young adults, because this really has the potential to reduce the onset of some of the more significant health issues, such as severe opioid addiction, severe mental illness, and chronic diseases, as well as STIs and HIV. And lastly, we want to have a focus on those hard-to-reach youth, so youth that aren't necessarily already connected to our systems, that may, you know, not be in school, they might be unemployed and may not be in the criminal justice system yet, but are at risk. And just a bit of data, there's a lot of data on all these priority populations, but I just want to do kind of a high-level overview of them. The first one is the newcomer and immigrant youth. We know that 35% of our Alameda County population are immigrants, and there's an emphasis with this population on unaccompanied immigrant youth, and youth who have experienced that parent and caregiver loss. We know that it's particularly difficult for this population to access healthcare, especially for those youth who are unaccompanied minors, and they need the support to get the services they need. There's also added stress because of the recent raids, the ICE raids that have caused increased mental distress for youth. And so this is a really important population for us to focus on. Also, LGBTQIA youth. We know that 41% of transgender youth and 28% of gay, lesbian, or bisexual youth in Alameda County have reported seriously considering suicide in the past 12 months. And this is data from 2021 and 23. Among our high school students, we know that approximately 10% of transgender students and approximately 9% of gay, lesbian, or bisexual students experience housing insecurity compared to about 5% of our heterosexual students. And we also know that the LGBTQI population is under attack from the federal administration, so we really want to focus our local resources here. And on to foster youth, approximately 62% of foster youth in high school exhibit chronic absenteeism compared to 22% of all high school students. And over 30% of students in foster care drop out from high school. And this is data from 22-23. And then we also want to focus on Black and brown youth. We know that African American Black youth are 9 times more likely to live in poverty than white youth, who have the lowest poverty rate in Alameda County. We also know that the Alameda County mortality rate for youth under the age of 25 is approximately 4 times higher for African American Black youth and 3 times higher for Pacific Islander youth relative to Asian youth who have the lowest mortality rate by race ethnicity. We also focus on youth experiencing homelessness and housing stability and instability. 14% of California high school students are experiencing housing insecurity, and 55% of those youth experiencing homelessness exhibit chronic absenteeism in high school. And the mortality rate for youth experiencing homelessness for ages 18 to 24 is 18 times higher than the general population. So these are our proposed strategies, and I'm going to go into a bit more detail in each one. But again, I just want to emphasize that within these strategies, we want to really focus on those priority populations I just reviewed. And we also want to make sure that we have a substantial reserve so that we can respond to the state and federal impacts as they arise over the next few years. One example could be, you know, purchasing vaccines that we might need over the course of the next few years. So our first strategy is the having healthcare services available at the Juvenile Justice Center, school-based vaccine programs. We want to sustain our school health center efforts. We want to continue to focus on violence prevention, developing a St. Rose birthing center. And we want to start launch an innovative adolescent health grant program. And finally, we want to focus on family support and engagement. And then this is our proposed three-year allocation budget. You can see on the right, that's the annual expenditure for each strategy. At the bottom, you'll see the St. Rose Birthing Center. That's $4 million for a one-time expenditure. And that'll be focused on the facility funding to build out that birthing center. So in the first year, our plan is to spend $14.44 million. And then in subsequent years, year two and three, it'll be a $10.44 million spending plan. And the increase in year one is because of that one-time funding to St. Rose. And then this will leave us with a balance in our reserve fund of approximately, or about $13.68 million. And now I'm just going to go over pretty high level each strategy. I mean, we could do presentations on each one of these, but we don't have time for that today. The first one is healthcare services at the Juvenile Justice Center. This is actually a mandate that we provide these health services for the JJC. This will allow us to expand the JJG services due to the CalAIM enhancements, and the funding will go towards staffing and overnight services on the weekend. And it's an $11.4 million allocation over the three-year funding cycle. And that's going to come from the base allocation, so that $6 million base. And as I mentioned, the services are legally mandated, and it's really difficult for this population to receive services if not provided directly at the JJC. And the next strategy is our school-based vaccine programs. So these are school, exactly what it says, school-based vaccine programs. So they're provided at school sites, and they're free, no cost to students, teachers, or parents and guardians. And they're very, you know, given in an accessible setting in our Alameda County schools. This is a $4.38 million allocation over the three-year funding cycle. And this accesses that base allocation as well as the escrow account. And this would all of this funding would go toward our public health department, their internal immunization for internal immunization program staffing, and the program operating expenses. This is a really important program for our pediatric safety net. It reduces disease burden, lowers the demand for acute care, and protects our vulnerable populations, specifically the ones that I was speaking to earlier. It also addresses the declining vaccination rates and the coverage gaps, and supports funding and staffing shortages. And again, this is another program that is under attack at the federal level. So we wanted to make sure that we had funding in this plan to sustain these programs. And our next strategy is our school health center program. School health centers are both clinics and places for students to work on positive youth development and have health education opportunities. There's five program areas in school health centers. They focus on medical, dental, behavioral health, health education, and youth development. And this is going to be $1 million annual allocation and $3 million over the three-year funding cycle. And this funding is coming from the escrow account, so our reserve.
Before you go on.
Oh.
So there might be other questions on the others, but on this one, how many school health centers do we have?
28.
28.
Yes.
So will the money be divided proportionally to the 28, or will it be divided based on the level of services at each of the 28?
Yeah, that's a good question. Typically, we do have the way that this goes through the Healthy Schools and Communities Division of Alameda County Health, and we typically divide the funding equally across the clinics, the centers. We haven't gotten into the implementation yet of this, but we do plan to have all of the money go toward those CBOs. At this point, we don't know if it'll be exactly the same per, like we might decide to focus more in some areas based on equity or in our priority populations. So don't know exactly yet, but.
Okay, and that's $1 million a year?
Yes.
$1 million a year. My other question here is, because I don't think it's gonna be covered in the others, I'm particularly interested in REACH mm-hmm. and Youth Uprising. So yep. are they?
Yes.
They'll receive?
Yep.
Okay.
There are clinics both at Castlemont on the Youth Uprising campus that's operated by Benioff Children's Hospital. And then there's the clinic in the REACH Ashland Youth Center, La Fuente, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to come back to that.
Yeah.
That's good, but I'll wait and see what else you got. Okay.
Yep. Great. And just want to just mention, too, that this is we've been focusing on school health centers in Alameda County for, I guess, about 30 years now. So it's a proven strategy, very high impact, and serves thousands of children across Alameda County, children and youth. Next is the violence prevention strategy that is run through the Alameda County Public Health Department. And this funds prevention and early intervention programming, and it provides outreach. It focuses on outreach and linkage and wraparound services for children and youth at risk of violence for healthcare navigation, behavioral health, transportation, case management. And again, this will have a real intentional emphasis on those priority populations that I already mentioned. And it's a $4.44 million allocation over the three-year funding cycle. And this will go toward Alameda County Public Health staff, as well as to our direct service violence prevention and intervention programs. And this builds on the work that's already been happening that has been state funded. That funding, some of that funding is sunsetting, so this helps fill that gap for that violence prevention programming.
Right. So, sorry to interrupt again. So 60% of the $4.44 million is for staffing, 40% for direct services. So I'm particularly interested in knowing, obviously, the metrics and the outcomes for all of the buckets. But here, what are the intervention strategies around violence prevention, particularly the direct services? Well, do you have a sense of what will be funded?
Yeah, I mean, I know because I actually reviewed the proposals for the current CBOs that are providing those violence prevention programs. They have a variety of different kinds of programs. Some are focused on education in schools, violence prevention promotion and education in schools. Some are programs that have like mentorship programs that are also connected to schools where they pair a mentor with a youth that may have experienced violence within a school. I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
There's lots.
Well, because I don't know who the CBOs are that receive violence prevention funding
yeah.
through public health. Will they receive some of this funding?
Yeah, that's a good question as well. We probably would need to do another RFP process, so potentially. Kristen Clopton might be on the call that could answer these. Yeah. I don't know the exact funding timeline for when the fund sunset of those current
CBOs. Yeah, I'm drilling down on this because I know, with the budget challenges Oakland's had,
yeah.
a number of the programs and CBOs that provide violence prevention strategies in Oakland have been either cut back or
yep.
or maybe even eliminated. And we do know violence prevention is an upstream strategy.
Let's put it
that way, as opposed to enforcement. So I'm really interested in knowing, and the 40% seemed very low. Even actually, $4.4 million seems low. And I'm curious, I'd like to have a follow-up in the committee around Mike Midnight Basketball. Is that one of them?
Yeah.
Youth Alive, is that I need
yeah.
to understand who is getting funding mm-hmm. to address violence in our communities. And obviously, this isn't just Oakland. It's countywide. But we have more challenges in certain parts of the county than others. So just wanted to really look at that. And once again, I'm questioning the amount, so
yep.
I just want to flag that.
So we can definitely provide you with that information. Anika, you want to?
Yeah, I just and maybe toward the end for more questions, Kristen could come on. But In terms of the violence prevention funding, so you know, the board had allocated some ARPA funding for that, and so we do have a bit of a glide path on that, but that funding ends in 2026. So this is intended to support the public health department with that cliff, and then of course continue to put funding out to the organizations.
And that is music to my ears, because yeah, we don't want to cut off our efforts around preventing violence because the ARPA funding stream, you know, is exhausted. We need to, you know, there needs to be some continuity of a service so we really get it. Hopefully making a shift and change.
Agreed.
You know, so that's good. But I do think this committee would like to get more information. And I know you mentioned, Lisa, all of these strategies you can go into more detail on. So we're probably going to see more detail.
I also want to mention that all these strategies, too, I think will impact violence prevention. You know, will impact the decrease of violence. So we try, what we're trying to do, which I didn't mention at the beginning, is really integrate all these strategies. So we'll have an internal work group where we can kind of work together to make sure that we're serving our priority populations, and that kind of violence prevention efforts is integrated into various strategies, like the school health center strategy, for example. So it's not going to just live here. And then the St. Rose Hospital Birthing Center, this funding is the one-time $4 million allocation that will be used to remodel and build out that birthing center. It'll fund renovation and bring that location up to code, and it'll also fund the equipment and furnishings. And this is important because, as you all know, Hayward has a large Medicaid population, and there's a need for expanding birthing programs that are really specific to the needs of that particular community. And we want to develop this innovative adolescent health grant program. And this, the majority of this funding will go directly to CBOs, probably through an RFP process. It'll be a competitive, you know, grant program. And again, this will be an opportunity for us to focus on those priority populations that I already reviewed. And it may focus on areas like prevention and early intervention. And we really want to try to get some youth-driven programming in there. One idea is that perhaps we can leverage our youth advisory, youth advisory board of the Housing and Homeless Services to help us design this RFP. Just kind of an example of what we mean by youth-driven programming. We also know that there's been an increase in poor behavioral health outcomes for adolescents, and there's also been a lot of health disinformation. So these might be opportunities to use this grant program to kind of focus on those areas. And it also allows us to be very flexible and responsive to meet community needs. And lastly, family support and engagement. So Help Me Grow, some of the funding in this strategy will go toward Help Me Grow. And Help Me Grow is a helpline for families and providers that support early childhood development. And it connects them to essential services. It does developmental screening. They've been a grant-funded model. It's been transitioning toward a Medi-Cal reimbursement model, and they're facing a shortfall of their child health and disability prevention funding. So this funding would help with that shortfall and help them kind of transition to this Medi-Cal reimbursement model. Some of this funding is also going toward our Father's Core program, which I know you're all very familiar with. and this will help us expand the provider capacitor building, provider capacity building to offering two cohorts per year. It'll continue to create the father-centered services, so fatherhood support and parenting education groups over eight CBOs. And it'll help support designing a father-centered media campaign. And also just fostering the father-friendly system of care. So you all approved the father-friendly principles. This funding will help really implement and operationalize those principles. And then a little bit around the community education and support for newcomer and immigrant families. We have a newcomer website, so some of this funding will also support our Alameda County newcomer website, which focuses on basic needs, legal resources, and government services, just to name a few. and then on to next steps. So we presented our initial thinking and planning at the January 28th Board of Supervisors meeting. And then we did a lot of planning in between that meeting and this meeting here today, all through March, May, and June, meeting with our partners and our internal staff around the strategy planning and development. And then today we're presenting here to you at the Health Committee, and we're hoping to get a recommendation to present these strategies and our plan at the September 9th Board of Supervisors meeting.
All right, well, thank you for this presentation and all the work all of you have put into this. I know typically I ask my colleague to respond first, but I've already jumped out there, so I'm going to continue. Excuse me. When Alex Briscoe was the head of the agency, there was a study done on the county's youth centers, REACH and YU. Mm-hmm. So you've talked about the clinics for those two. Mm-hmm. I'm more concerned now about funding for those because there was deficiencies in our ability to fund them to the degree and the magnitude that was appropriate and necessary. I don't know if the agency still has access to that study, but it was a very comprehensive study, and I'd like to see whether or not YU and REACH were considered for an allocation from this pot, a direct allocation.
That's a good question. You want to answer?
Yeah, we can look up the old study, and then Lisa could talk a little bit more about the centers themselves. We did consider thinking about REACH and YU for this funding, and part of the issue we run into is that there is strong non-supplantation language in the ordinance, and so we would need to sort of look through it a little bit more, and we were trying to balance, how much funding to support county infrastructure versus CBO allocations. So that was, but if you'd like us to look into it some more, we can.
Yeah, please do. Because once again, we don't want to supplant, but I know REACH and YU can both. I think once again, that study showed where there were gaps. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think those gaps have been filled, quite frankly. And they might have even become more pronounced. So I'd be very interested. And that's the problem, having been around here for a while. You know things, maybe, you shouldn't know. But
yeah.
And since both of those, REACH is the only county's youth-run facility, so I think we need to pay some attention to that and see where we can support that meaningfully out of this allocation, across, the 20 years. But then in addition, YU, that's a nonprofit. That's a CBO. It's county property, but run by CBO, and I know YU has challenges as well, and there might be gaps where we're not supplanting. So I really, really would like for us to drill down and look at that very surgically, because to me, this is like manna from heaven. The fact that the voters approved this, Aaron worked on the campaign, both campaigns, and I was very involved with these campaigns with former Supervisor Wilmer Chan. And so the fact that we have these resources, I really want to see these resources put to use where in the past we didn't have resources, but now we have resources. And so if we're not helping YU and REACH out to kind of broaden and enhance their capacity to deliver in their areas, and, they're youth that come to REACH who come from Oakland. Mm-hmm. So so the point is I really want us to flag that. So that was one thing. Then another thing is, I've already talked about violence prevention. The best way to keep young people out of trouble is to nurture them, give them, opportunities. So there used to be, and I don't know if it's still happening in Oakland, but there used to be like a summer youth jobs program. Mm-hmm. So is there any funding set aside for that type of of intervention that, you know, once again, that is going to be sustained over the next?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah. I think what you're talking about is partly integrated into some of the strategies I presented, specifically the violence prevention strategy. I know we are funding CBOs that are focusing on like profession, you know, what your job, summer job, it may not necessarily be summer jobs, but like the career pathway and trajectories. Mm-hmm. We also focused on that through the school health center strategy. But yeah, also great point that we can look at more.
I know you want to bring this to the board on the 9th, but I might want to hold it up because I want to have this committee get a little bit more into the weeds on this.
Okay.
Because this is stuff that really interests me, having served on the city council in Oakland, having basically championed and led the effort around the violence prevention strategies in Oakland when I was on the council, and having, you know, I'm on the board of YU, you know, reaches in my district. I helped to create that. I mean, there's a lot of interventions here that I'm particularly interested in. And once again, having these resources, this is like something that has never been anticipated. The other big piece around violence prevention is resilience. Mm-hmm. So I want to see how and that's why I'm looking at that $4.44 million. Mm-hmm. It just seems so minuscule mm-hmm. when we're talking $31 million plus six. So mm-hmm. you're starting out with $37 million that you're allocating, and you're putting that over a three-year period, right? And then there's another $12 million that's coming the second year and the third year. So that's 31 plus 12.
I think
12.
It's 6 million every year. So 6 yeah. million base, yeah.
Yeah, so 31 plus 18 is 9. That's 49 million over 3 years, right? So you're programming 49 million, right? Am I wrong or?
We had also we're programming about 11 million a year for those first 3 years, and then also reserving about 10 million in a reserve. But so there is some cushion for us to go back and revisit some of these strategies. And I was wondering if either Kimmy or Kristen are on, they might be able to talk a little bit more specifically about some of the violence prevention questions.
Yeah, and I have no problem if you're, you know, with the reserve, because I think that's important. And I think the reserve was more like 13 million. So let's say you're doing 13 million out of 49 million, that leaves 36 million that you're potentially programming. So I want to try to see what are the metrics associated with that, that 36 roughly. And then there's some really more granular stuff I want to take a look at in terms of like the, you know, youth jobs. Mm-hmm. How, you know, if it's cut across all of these interventions, maybe not the birthing center, let's say,
yeah.
but across these different interventions, how many jobs will that generate mm-hmm. per year? Mm-hmm. Either during the summer or for pipeline, mm-hmm. whatever. So it's that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested in wanting to hear more back, more from this agency on this funding before we advance this to the Board of Supervisors. Yeah, yeah. Supervisor Lena Tam, not Wilma Chan. Supervisor Lena Tam, do you have any questions or comments?
Thank you, Chair Miley. You kind of did that the first 4 months I was in office. Now I'm in my three and a half years, right? Thank you for this presentation. This is obviously very timely given our conversations over what's happening with Measure C, with Children's Hospital, and with Measure W, and then combining that in the oversight with Measure A. So one of the things I would like to see is to get a better understanding of what is it we are currently funding, like say, let's say the vaccine program, the REACH Center, because I know that Supervisor Miley has to augment it with $600,000 from his office, and to see what Measure C would be able to do in addition versus like backfilling some of the existing funding, because like with violence prevention, we spent $1 million through public health, but it was mainly focused on data gathering. That was with the ARPA funding. So trying to understand, you know, what that base level is we're spending money on and how this is going to augment that just from an oversight perspective. I appreciate that you have the prudent reserves given the impacts of the federal government. We're also trying to obviously do that with Measure W, but do you have an analysis? Because I know there's an expectation based on what Alameda County Health did, was there will be 252,000 people potentially that could lose coverage with these new requirements next year with Medicaid and Medi-Cal. How specifically do you think that would affect the youth and children?
Yeah, that's a good question, Supervisor. So the Social Services Agency estimated that with the new Medicaid work requirements, up to 250,000 Alameda County residents could lose Medicaid coverage. That's about half of our Medicaid population. In terms of children, ideally, Medicaid for children has been an easier thing that both the federal and state government have agreed that, you know, you help kids stay on for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. However, with especially in situations where there's mixed status families, we expect some disruption. We might also expect some disruption in the rather than renewing automatically once a year, having to renew a couple times a year. So that's where things like that Help Me Grow program can be helpful because they are connecting directly with families. And so it's a space to do outreach. But those Medicaid impacts were going to feel sort of system-wide. And that was part of our, overall thematic thinking on some of this funding is to try and think through where there might be cuts coming down the pike. For example, in the vaccine prevention,
right.
That was one of the cuts that we did experience this year is with the there was an enhanced grant that allowed COVID funding to be used for increased vaccination, and so that has been cut. And so we're planning to, but our program to do vaccinations in partnership with schools and communities has been really helpful, so we'd like to continue to put that in there. Part of the reserve might also go to things like vaccine purchase if that ends up, just tanking. So trying to anticipate some things, but not knowing all the answers.
Okay, that's good because it sounds like we may have to do some backfilling. Because when we talked about the vaccine program, like in the Oakland Unified School District, Shoe the Flu, they needed some extra funding, but that typically I thought we provided some of that, but that wasn't necessarily just for low-income students, right?
Okay. And the Shoe the Flu program, so that was sort of a joint project with us and Alameda Alliance for Health also
right.
funded it partially. But the work that we've been doing more recently with the expanded COVID funding is broader than Shoe the Flu. And so we'd like to continue to be able to continue that work, especially as people lose access. Maybe schools are a place where we can provide coverage to kids for different things.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Do we have an update on, you provided it sort of on the St. Rose Birthing Center, but there's, Children's Hospital is planning on building like 18 to 20 units for mental health care, and that is what they plan on using their Measure C allocation for. And then obviously the timing of the birthing centers, because Alameda Health Systems had contacted our office with all that's happening at the federal level. They're seeing people afraid to go to the hospital, the emergency room, then the Medi-Cal and Medicaid funding gets cut. And then so they're going to have to backfill that to keep basically the payroll and their staffing and their existing costs. They're expecting like $100 million a year for the next 3 years in potential impact. Are we timing some of these capital improvements with, with that potential problem? Because St. Rose is part of the AHS system now.
We can follow up with you on a little bit more about the timing question. But one of the things that, we as a system, including AHS, our clinics, the county, as we go into the times of Medicaid cuts, one of the things that's really important is to continue to draw down whatever Medicaid revenue we can. And so in the St. Rose strategy, you know, with the transition, my understanding is that they have the labor and delivery unit was closed. Mm-hmm. And so AHS plans to build a birthing center that has sort of a more programming that focuses specifically on moms, right? And so we do imagine that there will continue to be Medicaid births at that hospital. And so we want to be able to have a space there where they can continue to draw down some funding, but we can follow up with you on the timing question.
Okay, I appreciate that. And I look forward to getting a little bit extra level of detail before it goes to the board on the base allocation and then the enhancement. And I know Supervisor Fortunato Bass brought up the issue of trying to get somebody with lived experience on the Measure W committee, which is now combined with Measure C and Measure A. And why is Supervisor Miley shaking his head?
Because I don't think we made a decision to combine the Measure W with C and A, because C and A are look back. I think what we're looking for is to have someone or some folks with lived experience to have input into the Measure W homeless strategies and plans before we pass them and implement them, as opposed to look back to determine whether or not we spent the money the way we said we would spend it. So that's why Measure C and Measure W are not the committees we want to use. My staff's going to come back. You know, Nika's going to, you know, she can chime in. She's going to come back with how we might realize that. Am I right? Go ahead, speak.
Yeah, thank you, supervisors. So for the look-back requirements, there is a look-back requirement for Measure C. There is one for Measure W as well. In terms of being the agency that sort of administers these, it's better for us to sort of have them all under the same infrastructure. We understand and appreciate that the members of the committee would be potentially taking on some additional work. So we're going to think about how to make that simpler for them. For the Measure W specifically with regard to people with lived experience, where at least what I took away from last week's board discussion was not to add people to the committee. Each of the board members does have seats that they can appoint. And so if you wanted to infuse someone, you could that way. But what we plan to clarify for the board is that we have a variety of spaces where people with lived experience serve in that advisory role. So we have a youth advisory board specifically for homelessness. We have a healthcare for the homeless has a community advisory board. And all of the committees on the continuum of care have a 20% requirement for participation from people with lived experience. So we'd want to kind of continue to use those as the advisory bodies. The Home Together Refresh also has a group specific for people with lived experience. But then the look back requirements could all be sort of taken care of in one structure. And it would allow us to kind of think about how we also report back on all three of those measures for you.
I appreciate that clarification. When you're participating from Atlanta, it's a little harder to hear the complete discussion.
Yeah, and it was 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock for you. For us here, it was early, but it was late for you, yeah.
Yeah, so that helps a lot. And so it sounds like we have existing advisory committees that have the lived experience requirement that maybe wasn't something that Supervisor Fortunato Bass had anticipated. And so the composition of the Measure A, which is now C, and W oversight committee will pretty much stay the same, because that's more of a good government looking back at whether we spent the money in accordance with the ballot measure. Okay, thank you so much. That's all I have.
Yeah, because I do think it's important to have folks with lived experience kind of helping to inform us. I didn't want to mix up the look back piece because it's just complicated. The appreciate what we've got today. This is really good. And my questions weren't meant to be critical. They were. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure we're getting at some stuff because that we've never been able to get at before. Because we got, like I said, this is, I just can't believe the fact we got Measure C, we've got Measure W, we've got resources to buttress the safety net, despite the challenges we might face from the federal government or any impacts from the state as well because of the feds. And we need to make sure these resources produce results. Because 20 years for Measure C will be 2040, right? Yeah, okay. I hope to still be alive come 2040. I won't be on the board come 2040. So I'm hoping that as a result of what we're doing today, it's going to reap rewards down the road, and we'll begin to see those rewards in terms of a more healthy Alameda County completely, not just in pockets, but everywhere with these resources here. Because as you pointed out, if we can get to these youngsters early enough and do these interventions, they should become productive members of our society in many different ways. So I think that's the key, and I think that's one reason I know when Aaron and I were talking about this, maybe 10 years ago, roughly 10 years ago, we really got behind this with Angie Garland and others around Measure C because, this is transformative. I mean, people talk about transformative. This can really be transformative. So I want to make sure we're appropriating resources where we either haven't been able to in the past or we've had deficiencies in the past. Mm-hmm. So we can really see some returns. And then I like the innovation piece as well. And then when we define pediatric, what age are we talking about? 1 to 20, 1 to 25? What's the age span?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I mean, we actually searched the ordinance and it doesn't specify, but I think the official is 0 to 18, but most of our programs serve that transitional age youth. Because that's a really important, and I know Kimmy speaks to this a lot, that's kind of a crucial time period that I think that we really want to focus on for all of these strategies.
Maybe 0 to 25, that's what you're
saying? Yeah, 0 to 24, 20, yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
All right, okay. Okay, so let's, are there any other staff that want to speak before we open up to the public? Have any other staff?
Yeah, we do have the public health director on, so I don't know, Kimmy, if you want to. Raise your hand. Okay.
We can come back to her.
Let's see a phone number, not a name. So yeah. That's why we're,
So let's open it up for public comments as well. So if there are any members of the public, either in the chamber or virtually, that want to speak.
Sure. First two speakers in person, Mia Cooper Khan and Tu Quat.
Hello, my name is Mia Cooper Khan. I am the Senior Manager of Integrated Health and Community Relations at Alameda Health Consortium, the network of 8 federally qualified health centers in Alameda County. I wanted to thank Alameda County for their partnership with federally qualified health centers to operate school-based health centers. Of the 28 school-based health centers in Alameda County, 23 are provided by, FQHCs provide services at 23 of the 28 health centers and are the lead agency at 18 of these sites. Our health centers school-based sites provide medical, dental, and behavioral health services. One tool that I'd like to highlight across our health center school-based sites is the pediatric school-based care coordinator roles, which some of which face risk due to Proposition 1. Our health centers and our school-based sites are part of the overall FQHC systems that face increase in uncompensated care due to the challenges in Medi-Cal eligibility and enrollment rules beginning January 2026 for adults who are considered to have unsatisfactory immigration status and state policies eliminating full Medi-Cal reimbursement rates for FQs beginning in 2026 when they provide care for different categories of immigrant patients, including children. Being able to serve kids at school-based sites requires predictable reimbursement, which we will not have due to expected loss of Medi-Cal reimbursement from these policies. We encourage consideration of the impact of federal state changes as part of the Measure C spending plan. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out, because I'm a big supporter of school-based health centers, the clinics there. And I think Lisa pointed out that we are looking to use resources to support our school-based health centers. And then obviously, since the federally qualified clinics are a major implementer of those clinics, I'm sure that's going to be taken into consideration, right? Yeah. So thanks for speaking on this today. Next speaker.
Good morning, Supervisor Miley and Supervisor Tam. Thank you so much for your leadership during this time. My name is Tu Quach, and I'm the president at Asian Health Services, a community health center that provides care in 12 Asian languages. For over 50 years, we've been a lifeline for tens of thousands of underserved patients. Each year, our staff of 600 bilingual and bicultural health care providers provide services to about 50,000 patients through whole person care that includes medical, dental, and behavioral health to some of the most vulnerable in our community. We rely heavily on state and federal funding, especially reimbursements for these visits for the Medi-Cal and Medicare patients. The threatened Medi-Cal cuts for immigrants, including undocumented, those here for less than 5 years, asylees, and refugees, will have significant impacts on the lives of Alameda County residents. In addition, work requirements and other changes will affect many others and push them off Medi-Cal coverage. We have estimated that this can result in 5 to 10 million loss per year for our organization. Other community health centers and safety nets face similar extreme financial impact. We cannot sustain this type of loss over multiple years, yet we know that scaling back on our patients will only create a greater harm for them as well as our collective community. To preserve care for our vulnerable patients, we desperately need additional support to sustain our operations and to pay for our hardworking staff. Otherwise, we're fearful that our safety net organizations may not make it through the next 4 years. We know that the county can't solve all major dilemmas that this political climate has created, yet the county has been a trusted partner for so many of us. As we think about major threats to our healthcare system, the safety nets like community health centers are foundational to the health and well-being of Alameda residents. Thank you.
And just real quickly, and you're not a federally qualified?
We are.
You're federally qualified too?
Yeah.
Okay, so will we be taking into consideration what we just heard?
Yes.
Hello?
Okay. So I thought, I just wanted to make sure of that. Okay.
Supervisor, if I could.
Hello?
We'll get to that speaker in a minute.
Hello?
Just on the FQHCs, and I appreciate my colleagues from the CHCN network to talk about this issue. And as Supervisor Tam mentioned, the Medicaid cuts create such an uncertain environment for us that in terms of the safety net, there's core safety net partners that we have. And we are really committed to looking at all different venues to see how we can work together to make sure that the county residents have services they need.
Yeah, because I think it was good the speaker pointed out the county is an important partner with the federally qualified clinics to buttress the safety net. And the fact that we're in this climate is recognized and acknowledged. We can't, we're not going to be able to do everything, but we can do a lot. With Measure C and hopefully with Measure W too. Okay, so let's go to the next speaker.
Caller, you're on the line. Please unmute.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. This is Professor Fowles. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm Professor Fowles, former professor at Cal State Universities and former health commissioner for the city of Berkeley. My concern was two statements that I found in your supplemental of materials and attachments. One said that the preschool curriculum would help improve the readiness of children for advanced work in elementary school, junior high, middle school, and high school and college. And then item 7 says that homeless families and children deserve the best that the health system can offer. Both of these items are under your Alameda County safety net financing, the 20%. My concern is that I don't see anything in there to talk about putting homeless families into homes. My concern is that you have some surpluses and you have some what I call wiggle room to try to make possible at least 30 to 90 days of emergency housing that would allow families to stabilize themselves while children are in school. And then while they work through the BACS coordinated entry system and the HMIS system to get in them into permanent housing. So I was wondering if there would be some way that our organization, Telegraph Community Ministry Center, which has the Manna from Heaven breakfast program and a roof over their heads, emergency to permanent housing, is there some way that we could partner with you? Thank you. That was my question.
All right, thank you. Let's see if staff has a response, because I would suspect that this Measure C doesn't provide for housing, and that might be something more appropriate through Measure W, but does the staff have a response?
Yes. So as a part of our Home Together plan in general, aside from any Measure W infusions, we do have programs to connect families to housing. And so if you want to reach out to me, I can make sure that we connect you with the right people on our team.
So if the speaker would make sure we get your contact information so we can follow up with you. Any other speakers? Yes, go.
Stephanie, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Stephanie Urbina, and I'm the Youth Health Service Manager at the Augusto Vasquez Health Center. I want to thank the county staff partners for the time and diligence that they have put into the proposal and more for the long partnership to support the Augusto Vasquez delivery of healthcare services for children and their families. Our pediatric services include maternal and child home visiting, as well as operating 3 school-based health centers clinics, which we are able to do and partner with and part of the contracts with the county. Our contracts are crucial to providing these services, but we also rely on predictable reimbursement through Medi-Cal for Medi-Cal allowable services and other funding. One of the ways we meet families' needs is through pediatric care coordinators who are currently funded through Mental Health Services Act funds that will sunset in July 2026 due to the Prop 1. We also know that the changes in the state and federal policies mean an increasing number of patients will lose their Medi-Cal eligibility. While we still continue to provide care, that means those services will be uncompensated. We appreciate your commitment to ensuring community clinics like ours and are prioritized as essential safety net providers. Thank you all.
There are no more speakers.
Did Director, Public Health Director Kimmy, did she ever get on?
Kimmy said she's on. If you could you elevate her as speaker?
I want to thank the speakers for speaking today on this very important item, because once again, I'm just very, very thankful county's got resources that we can really invest in this despite the challenges from the federal administration and how and any impacts on the state. And I do think the staff recognize the importance of the pediatric coordinators. So hopefully all that will be taken into consideration. And both Supervisor Tam and I said we'd like to have this come back to this committee before it goes to the board. And so before I recognize Kimmy, our next committee meeting is on September what? When? September 8th? Are you okay with this coming back on September 8th? Okay. All right. Okay. September 8th, then? Is that, you can bring it back to us? And then you can also schedule it for the board on the 9th. And if we're not necessarily comfortable, we'll just pull it.
Yeah, and we don't, we were just aiming for the first potential board meeting possible, so the 9th is not a hard and fast deadline. Just wanting to get board approval sometime in the fall so that we can start getting the money out.
Okay, all right. Oh, Director Kimmy, Public Health Director, my favorite public health director.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
All right. So thank you, Supervisor Miley and Supervisor Tam. Just wanted to say a couple of things about the importance of this opportunity. Supervisor Miley, you mentioned that, you know, we are in a unique situation in that we actually have resources to put toward needs that we have known for a while are facing our community. So this is definitely an opportunity. For the adolescent and violence prevention efforts that have been outlined in the presentation, just wanted to say a little bit about our desire to really bolster our early intervention with adolescents and young adults. We believe that if we were to really put in place a concerted effort to work across our system to lean in with those young people who are no longer in school at times and are not really accessing any system, but we are not, they're not in the criminal justice system yet. They're not, you know, showing up in our hospitals yet. We want to intervene with them before all of that happens. And so this is an opportunity for us to really bolster that system across the board. With regard to violence prevention, your board approved a very generous beginning of our Office of Violence Prevention in the Public Health Department as a permanent structure. And those one-time dollars have allowed us to hire a badly needed staff, as well as really improve data and to fund existing and some new interventions across Alameda County. We are hoping to really stabilize this office. As you know, the ARPA dollars are one time. We also received funding from the California Department of Public Health for youth suicide prevention, also one-time funding. And we really want to stabilize this office and to be able to expand on those interventions that we are able to see really work. One of the things that we have suspected and we were hearing from community partners is that there are interventions that work, but they're too small, they're underfunded. And it is one of our goals to lift up what we call lift up what works, to identify those interventions that really have a substantial impact and to really help to scale them. Funding in this arena will do those things for us, and we look forward to bringing more information forward to your board in the future around these two arenas. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Kimmy, and thanks for weighing in, because you know I know a little bit about violence prevention, having got the county to adopt the Comprehensive Violence Prevention Plan back in 2005 or six or thereabouts, and having, you know, had a lot of input on that from the Prevention Institute. So I'm going to be very interested in seeing, because once again, we're going to bring this back for a more detailed presentation at the board's, I mean, at this committee's September 8th meeting to see some of these interventions, because I agree with you. We take the interventions that we know work, scale them, provide some stability for your violence prevention office within the next 15 years or thereabouts. I really hope we can see some good results. So I'm not just focusing on violence prevention. I want to see it all. But the point is, I do think this presents a unique opportunity, as you've pointed out. And so let's take this report today. It's an informational report, and we'll look forward to a detailed report, particularly drilling down into those buckets. I think it's, what's it, six buckets or whatever? Yeah, and how you're looking at that over the next 3 years with the roughly the 40, 49 million, with maybe 13 going to the reserves. Supervisor Tam.
Just real quickly, at the September 8th meeting, when you come back, I know we had provided some funding through public health through one of the CBOs to deal with violence prevention, and particularly I think they came back with some reports based on their community forums and recommendations. I think that was like at that time centered around anti-Asian hate issues. Can we have that presentation also at that upcoming meeting?
Yes, we can work with the our team and around the planning. So for related to violence prevention in general, we were planning to, I think, come to a joint health and public safety meeting in October. And that would provide the updates from community partners as well as the funding that went out with the ARPA dollars and the CDPH funding. And so, but if you're looking for something a little sooner, we can. Yes, okay.
Yes, we're looking for something a little sooner. Yeah, you can give us a preview of coming attractions, but yes.
Okay.
Thanks. All right, any other speakers today on this item? Do we have any speakers on non-agendized items? Public comment.
Caller, go ahead.
I'm sorry, this is Professor Files coming back just to give you my contact information. I didn't want to speak again, but thank you.
Okay.
There are no more speakers.
Okay, there's no other speakers. So the Health Committee meeting for Monday, July the 28th is now adjourned. We will meet. We won't meet again until September the 8th, so everyone have a safe, productive summer. Thank you.